You're listening to a One Fine Baby podcast. One Fine Baby acknowledges the traditional owners of land and water that this podcast is recorded on and pays respects to elders past, present and emerging.
From peeing on the stick to surviving postpartum, this parenting thing is the biggest roller coaster ride you'll ever take.
So we're giving you access to the best experts and advice from real mums who've got the tiger stripes and survival tips to share.
Together, we'll tackle each trimester
so we can empower you to make the best decisions for you and your baby.
The One Fine Baby Pregnancy Podcast is your safe space, your knowledge base,
with the answers to your biggest questions all in one place.
So welcome back to the One Fine Baby Pregnancy Podcast.
Oh my goodness, what a joy.
We are so happy to be with you today. It's Nadine here.
And Olivia. We are hosts.
We are your hosts.
We are. But today we have an incredible guest with us today. In a previous episode, we covered off the private system.
The private system.
And birthing in the private system, what that looks like from the point of view of an OB. And today we have one of, I'm going to call it, one of Australia's best midwives.
Oh, you she called it.
To reveal... to expect during pregnancy and birth in the public system.
Yes, we have worked with Monique for many years and, I mean, you just got to jump on her socials to see just how invested she is in the whole midwife.
And funny, but yes. Monique Maitland is...
And clever?
But no.
Clever should
come
first.
The pressure is on now.
Let me finish my little ode to you, okay? Monique Maitland is one of those vibrant, supportive faces you want to see by your side in the birthing suite. She's a skilled midwife. Hilarious, and she's made waves across the pregnancy landscape via her platform, the Midi Society. And I guess what's cool about her is she's the modern midwife, right? She's changing the face of birthing in this country with very, very, very open conversations about everything to do with pregnancy and birth. So what a joy to sit down with
Welcome,
you today.
Welcome, Monique.
Yeah.
Guys, stop. I'm going to get all emotional.
I'm going to cry.
You really pumped up my client, but no, absolute pleasure to be a part of this podcast again. And yeah, I'm very, very passionate about supporting women and men across this roller coaster of parenthood. And yeah, absolute pleasure to be invited back on the podcast and work with you guys again. I'm super excited to have this chat.
Yeah, sure is a roller coaster.
That's for sure.
So let's get into it, Monique, because I need a bit of education. So I did do the private system when I gave birth. And to be honest, I really didn't get much time with a midwife. And that's, you previously just pointed out, because you did the private system. I know a lot's changed in the last 5 to 10 years, but I would love to know, like, what is the role of a midwife in the public birthing system?
So I think there's a really big sort of misconception, like automatically we think the birth of a baby, and in most cases, women will just associate that with an obstetrician delivering their baby or helping birth their baby. In the private section, that is probably more common, but in the public section, the doctors and midwives, we sort of work all together, and we're going to talk about a little bit later on your different models of care in the public system. But if you're, depending on what model of care you're in, majority of the care is given, like, just completed by the midwives, you know, all your antenatal booking appointments, all your pregnancy appointments throughout the remainder of your pregnancy, all those assessments. And we even do ultrasounds, we do vaginal examinations. When it comes to the actual birth itself, you know, the minute you walk through those doors, you're assigned a midwife for the remainder of their shift. So you might see one midwife, you might see two midwives, you might see three midwives, depending on how long you're there for, hopefully not too long. But we do everything. So if everything's low risk and there's no complications, you won't see a doctor at all. And I think that almost frightens women because of what I said before. They associate that birth is medicalized, there should be a doctor in the room. But actually, it doesn't have to be as medicalized as society probably thinks it is. And you won't see a doctor unless we need them. And if we do need a doctor, it's amazing that we have access to such incredible ones in the public system. They will come in and assist us.
So I am a huge public birthing system fan. Both of my children were birthed through the public system. And I was saying to Nadine earlier, the only time I even saw an OB was during my daughter's birth, when there was an issue, basically we needed intervention. And that was the only time I'd seen one. And I was, everything was just going so smoothly. Midwives were like just so caring, and like I really just connected with
the midwife. Oh, the voice of a midwife is something else, isn't
and
it?
You never need an OB. I never was left kind of wondering where my OB was. I just never even had that. And I think a lot of people don't realize that actually, you know, midwives can do everything. And if you don't see an OB in the public system, it's probably a good thing because it means everything's going quite smoothly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Can we talk a little bit about what are the birthing options in the public system?
Yeah. So depending on sort of what state you're in and also depending on the hospital, because we have our lower risk hospitals, which are more our local, smaller, very low risk sort of hospitals. And then we have our higher tertiary risk hospitals. So depending on what hospital you're in, you might have more choices for your model of care, if that makes sense. But I guess in general, so there's normally like a midwife standard care. So if we explore that a little bit more, say you went to the hospital for your first appointment, we usually will ask you, what sort of model of care are you thinking about? We look at your history, we go, yep, you fit the criteria to be midwifery led, or if you're high risk, then you would be flipped to the obstetric led care.
Yep.
There's different categories, and depending on what hospital, we can take either high risk women or lower risk women. It really just depends on the policies for that exact hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But the standard midwifery practice, so that's, if we sort of elaborate more on that, that's a large pool of midwives working within that team, okay, with a larger pool of women. So that's where I work. I work in that system. And it means that you don't have one-to-one care with a midwife. It's just you might see different sorts of midwives, but you're the lowest risk sort of pregnancy still.
So so hang on a second. So you call up the hospital and this is the pool you get into, or are there lots of other midwifery agencies that you can go to their own business?
So pretty much, say, Nadine, you were having another baby, right?
Yep.
You came into the hospital. Every woman should see a midwife in the public system for their first appointment. If there's flagged known other issues, they will be followed by that midwifery appointment by an obstetric appointment. But at that first appointment, we would have a chat. I'd find out what sort of model of care did you want to get into? You know, did you just want to be in the midwifery standard care? Do you want to be in a smaller team of midwives? Are you wanting that one-to-one continuity of care, or are you wanting to do your midwifery care with a private?
Do you pay more for that?
So you're not out of pocket at all of this.
Great.
It's just hard to get into with the one-to-one care, right? As in, like, they have only limited spaces?
For the one-to-one, so that's usually like the caseload or COSMOS, that's often what it gets referred to as, or midwifery group practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gold standard of practice, but because it's on call, so if we elaborate more on that, you have to be the lowest of lowest risk to get into that program. Mm. So this is looking at women who are really passionate about having a physiological labor and birth. So with minimal intervention, they're happy to sort of be, have the baby and ideally be home within the first 24 hours after birth. So just because I guess those midwives work so closely with those women, so there's that continuity throughout the birth, but then they'd also visit them at home, which is why it's that gold standard. So you get that continuity of care, familiar faces. But otherwise, going back to just the smaller midwifery model of care, the standard practice, that's just a larger group of midwives working with a larger group of women. So you might see someone you've met before, but it's not guaranteed that you always get that continuity.
Yeah, I got into the group midwife practice, and I was told that, like, after I call Nathan and tell him I'm pregnant, the next call I make is to the hospital to try and get into this group midwife practice because it's limited spots. And I had, like, my midwife, I was traveling in London at the time when I got accepted. Mm. She messaged me and said, "Hi, my name's Alyssa. This is my mobile number. I'm going to be your midwife." And we were like, we had a text relationship. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So that midwifery group practice, usually you're allocated like a primary midwife, but they work on call. So if they're out of their hours or if they're not like on shift, then you might get someone else from that team that you would have already met them, but you page them or message them depending on what their sort of policy is regarding that, about all your concerns. And when it comes to the actual like labor and birth, ideally they're the one that comes in and supports you, speaks to you over the phone originally, and then sees you at home. So that's why we know continuity, how important it is for women.
Yeah.
Like having that familiar face at a time where women feel vulnerable, that's why it's shown to be the golden standard of care.
Yeah, okay. And are there other midwifery practices that you can go to rather than just get any midwife from the hospital? Like, can you bring in your own midwife?
Yeah, so there's other models of care. So I guess if we break it down further, so we've spoken about that standard midwifery practice and then that caseload, so that one-to-one model of care. Sometimes hospitals have midwives in small teams, so it might be an even smaller pool of women and a smaller pool of midwives to get more continuity, but it's not the same as that one-to-one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then from there, we sort of have our shared care. So this might be either with a private practicing midwife, or some women choose, if they love their GP who specializes in obstetrics, they might choose to do like GP shared care. And I guess the pros and cons of that is often, you know, reduced wait times, more continuity throughout your antenatal appointments. So women choose to do that. And you can 100% do that with a private practicing midwife. Mm-hmm. But there are occasional appointments which are all pre-booked where you have to come into the hospital to touch base.
To go anyway.
Obviously with the hospital about how everything's going. So we can make sure we've got everything on file, we've got all your ultrasounds. But predominantly most of your care would be done with those midwives or the doctors who specialize in the obstetrics. But that sometimes is out of pocket.
I was going to ask, is there a cost associated with that if they're private?
Yeah, so depends on the doctor that you're seeing. Are they bulk billed? Mm-hmm. Can you get that rebate? But otherwise, a lot of private practicing midwives, you may not be able to. So it might be more of an out-of-pocket expense. That's if you're wanting more of that continuity. Absolutely, if you are happy to pay for that, you can.
Yep.
But that's not saying that they're going to come in for the time of birth.
Yep. Okay.
Gotcha. Sure.
And then the other sort of model of care that we have is obviously the home birthing sector. Okay. And some of those midwives, say you weren't someone who managed to go into spontaneous labor, you needed to come into the hospital to be induced. Some of those midwives, if they're affiliated with the hospital, they can then come and work in the hospital.
Oh, okay.
But not always.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't realize that you actually still have to, even if you're having a home birth, you still have to book into a hospital.
You have to be booked in
case
someone has to
realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, unfortunately, things might change.
Yep. Yep. That's great. Great knowledge.
And so the birthing options in the public system are?
So you just have your standard midwifery-based care. You might have your midwives in smaller teams. Then you might have the one-to-one program, or you might have the shared care with either a private midwife or a doctor, but you're still birthing in the public system. Or you might be obstetric-led if you're higher risk. And even if you are in higher risk, like a model of care with the doctors, you still will see midwives.
Yeah.
So, okay. And that's really important. Even if you're booked for a cesarean because maybe you've previously had a cesarean, you still will see midwives.
Even if you're in the public system, you can still have an elected C-section.
So I guess that's a bit of a tricky question, because what we've studied throughout, you know, midwifery, physiologically, we always want women to strive for a vaginal birth. Because if there's no indication to have a cesarean, I guess you shouldn't need one.
Mm.
But we do know birth can be really frightening for some women.
Mm-hmm.
And women can elect for a cesarean, but ideally they should only be having that cesarean if there's a real indication for it and the benefits outweigh the risks for that individual.
Well, a lot of my friends were like, are you having an elected C-section with Freddie? And I was like, yeah. And like, but you're going public. I'm like, yeah. Because I'd had a 3B tear with Eva 2 years prior, we spoke about it, the midwife and I, about our options. And she was saying, look, a vaginal birth is still really achievable if you would like it. But weighing up the risks for me and all the factors, I decided to elect for a C-section. And that was, I was not out of pocket. That was, I think that's news to a lot of people that you can go down that route.
Yeah, and that was for a medical, like, indication from your previous history. So absolutely, like, we're always going to support that. Like, we've given you that information. And they would have said to you, it's your choice. You can see either have a vaginal birth or opt for a cesarean, and then you've gone away and made that decision.
Yeah.
No one, I think, honestly, I just think the hospital gets a lot of slack. And I think social media plays a big role in that of I guess, shaping hospital birth in a bad sort of way. But we're
always there. What do you mean by that?
Like, I just feel like there's a lot of pushback, like, you know, don't birth in the hospital because, you know, that's so medicalized, you're going to be pushed to have intervention after intervention after intervention. And that's not necessarily true. Like, regardless of the model of care that you're in, we're still always trying to get you the best outcome.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? We still want women to have vaginal birth. That's our, like, our role is to support you as midwives and doctors, and no one's ever out to get you.
No, and I feel like intervention and C-sections have more traditionally been associated with private birthing.
Private anyway. Mm, yeah, the old obstetrics. Golf course, you know, doctors coming in
off the golf course.
Yeah.
But, and to be honest, like, yeah, they would, I would say we would see more interventions in, I don't know if this is an actual statistic,
yep.
So don't quote me on this, but people in the private setting, and you would have covered that in your last episode, but you have more of a say because I guess you're paying for that, right? If you're saying, I want to be induced at 38 weeks, your doctor is most likely going to go, okay, no worries.
Yeah.
Right?
So I kind of think that's maybe why women opt to go private more often than the public, because that's...
They feel they have the control.
Because they get a date. They go, yeah, I'm going in on this day at 9 a.m. Ideally, by birth, I'll birth at this time. Mm-hmm. I have the child. I can put them in childcare. And absolutely, lots of women want that. But it's just always educating yourself. If you haven't gone into labor yet and everything's low risk, why do you need to put yourself, like, in a medical sort of situation?
Mm. Yeah. Do you think there's any other reason other than that, like, why people go private? Even though our public system is so amazing?
I think it's a continuity, and I think it's coming back to the idea after having the baby that I get a private room, a longer hospital stay.
Oh, the private room. People are so hung up on the bloody private room, aren't they?
Oh, I got straight out of there. I wanted to stay for a week. No, I got straight out.
They had to kick me out of that hospital. But
it's each of their own,
but like,
isn't it?
And then I heard that, I think we covered this before, but basically – if you do in the public system get a private room, it means either there's a reason that, you know, you need to just get a little bit of extra attention, extra care, maybe something went a little bit awry, or you've had multiples. So if you are in a shared room, it means that, like, your pregnancy went perfectly, you're kind of not high risk, you're...
Do you know what? I just think we're spoiled in Australia. Both of my sister-in-laws are English, and they had their all their kids' vaginal births out that afternoon. Literally had it in the morning and
crazy.
Out that afternoon.
Why would you leave?
No,
that
but
afternoon?
That's just what they've been brought up with. That, like, that's just their whole thing. They don't. This whole hospital stay doesn't even enter their mind. They're like, what? I have to stay in hospital 5 days? No, thank you. Like, it's just
honestly,
a mindset. It's so fascinating.
Like, people are so fearful to go home, and yes, of course, everyone wants a private room because they ideally want their partner to stay.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing for it. But to be honest, women, if you're listening to this, your partners don't really do too much early days.
Nothing. Get
and
the
like,
coffee. That's
the
it.
Midwife is going to help you. So if you're in a shared room, send them home overnight, have a good rest for them.
Yep.
I know, luxury, but then they come back the next day. They're fresh. They can support you. And going home is a really positive step. Because eventually you're going to have to do it. And just know most states will offer you visits at home.
Yeah, that is actually a
huge
hack.
So you're not alone.
Yeah, need to get your partner to go rest so they can do all the errands, pick up all the stuff, make sure everything's tidy at home.
Because they're going to be put to task sooner or later.
I don't know, whatever. But they need to have their rest as well so that they can keep everything else trucking along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so I think another factor that plays into why people tend to go private even though our public system is so great is scans. Mm. So this is something I didn't know a lot of because I went public both times. I just got the scans that I got, and then I paid for one 3D scan because I felt like I'd gone too long without seeing Eva. but how many scans do you get in the public system?
So if everything is low risk, so obviously you would have your 12, your dating scan, okay, so your original ultrasound, which will tell you how many weeks pregnant you are and give you that due date. Following from that dating scan, you'd then get around your 12-week scan, which is looking at measuring the baby, making sure there's no other fetal abnormalities. You know, you do that with your genetic screening. And then you have your morphology scan around 20 weeks. And once again, that's making sure that baby looks really normal, is growing really well. If there is nothing flagged, say you don't have a low-lying placenta, you don't have any issues with the cord insertion, there was no abnormality detected in the baby, you don't have any other formal ultrasound.
Okay.
Okay, so in the private setting, most of the time those women are seeing a doctor. And what they do in every appointment is pretty much pop the ultrasound on. Yeah. Here, have a look at your baby. Mm-hmm. As midwives, we don't do that. At 36 weeks in the hospital that I work at, mm-hmm. we will do a quick ultrasound. It's not formal, but it's more of a presentation scan. So we're going, yep, this is definitely a head, not a bottom, to make sure that baby's cephalic and not breech. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we don't do any ultrasounds. Okay. And that lots of women always question us on that. Like I see that a lot when working in my appointments is, do you know, when's the next ultrasound? And it's unfortunately there aren't any, but it's just knowing that you're not having any other ultrasounds because nothing is wrong.
Yeah, everything's good.
You got to reframe. Well.
Everything is fine. Yeah. And, you know, some people are quite anxious and I get that. So you always have the option to go privately, like at a ultrasound clinic.
Yeah.
You just need the referral from your GP to just get an ultrasound for your reassurance.
I wasn't even anxious. That. I was just, I'm like, I miss her. It's been like
15
weeks since I've seen her. Like, I just want to see what she looks like now. Because especially with your first baby, like, I don't even know what's going on in there. Like, I just want to see her. So just to know, I mean, it's a lot cheaper to go and pay for one private scan than it is to pay for an obstetrician. So if you put it that way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Mm. Okay, let's talk about pain management.
Yeah.
Do I still get all of the pain management and intervention options that are offered traditionally in the obstetrician in the private system?
100%. Absolutely. So regardless if you go public or private, your pain relief options are exactly the same. Okay. When it comes to pain relief options, the best thing that you can do before walking into the birth suite is educating yourself. Okay. Those women that are more highly educated are more likely to have a more positive experience and avoid unnecessary intervention and, like pharmacological pain relief, so pain relief with medication. The thing about working as a midwife in the public system, we work alongside these women through it all.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess the doctors are amazing. They specialize more in those interventions and they're very good in emergencies when we need them. Mm-hmm. But as a midwife, my job is to sort of get you through as long as I can without needing to just opt for pharmacological pain relief. And that's our specialty.
Yeah.
That's our bread and butter, right? We'll get you in the shower. We'll try and get you in the bath. We'll do all these things. And I guess that's the difference with some of our like obstetricians and doctors. They don't have all those skills because that's not what they specialize in.
Yeah,
it's incredible what breathing work can do. What about the TENS machine? Do you guys
absolutely
promote that?
Yeah, we definitely do, and women love their TENS machine, but most hospitals, it's an additional cost. So some hospitals might have like a rental that you can, you know, pay to use, but most wouldn't, and it would be best to hire your own TENS prior.
Yeah, I think that's what my sister-in-law did.
Or the good old comb in the hand.
Comb in the hand, hey?
But in terms of epidurals, nitrous oxide, morphine, you can get all those things.
Yeah,
okay? So you can ask for them?
Absolutely.
And is it cost more money?
No. So once you're in the public system, as long as you are like an Australian citizen, you have Medicare, you're not paying for anything.
Mm. Can you believe I got all that for free? Are you like, what
the hell? Yeah, I am actually. cost of living. Hey.
Hey, I'm telling you.
This is what you've got to be thinking about.
I just loved my public experience.
And also like billions of people have given birth before. And
yeah, you're not special.
You're right. With the social media and all the noise and everything going on, it is quite an anxious time.
Well, and this is a very, very generalized statement that we may cut. Mm. But basically, obstetricians, if you to summarize it, obstetricians, because they're not kind of researched or taught in that TENS machine, bath, shower, comb in the hand, breathing, they are more likely or quicker to pick up the epidural than a midwife who is versed in all of those other kind of pain relief treatments, right?
Yeah. The thing is, when they're studying throughout their career, they're looking at all the medical perspective, right? They're examining all the emergency situations, how are they going to respond? They're looking at the deviations to the normal, okay? And as midwives, we like to educate our junior doctors. Like I did a birth with a junior doctor the other week and it was so special because she was like, I've never really done this, right? Like not monitoring the whole time, the baby's heartbeat, like being there, being with the woman. She sort of worked as a midwife. And that's the most important thing. They almost need to do that to be able to grasp the whole concept of birth. Mm-hmm. Because normal birth, it allows time and it's calm, right? It's not, we don't have to just jump on and do things for the sake of doing them, right? The less intervention, the less work for us.
Yeah, yes, so
and
true.
They have to normalize the normal. And I think that's sometimes what doctors struggle to do.
Yes.
That because their brain's in a medical perspective, right? And ultimately the care is on them if something goes wrong.
Yes. Midwives are almost like doulas in that sense, aren't they, in terms of the support they offer and the
guidance. I was
going to
ask what the difference is.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
So the difference between a doula and a midwife, doulas are more of a support person, amazing at what they do, but they haven't had like the medical training like a midwife. Anyone could sort of become a doula. They haven't had to go to university. They don't have the degree in midwifery. So they may not understand as much of like the intervention and the way that things work. Doulas are amazing, but my advice would be make sure you find a doula that is well educated, because sometimes, you know, I've worked with amazing doulas, but then I've worked with doulas that actually are advocating for the wrong things and don't really understand why we're doing the things that we are.
Yeah, they're like a professional birthing hype girl. You know,
pretty
but,
much.
But they need to, like, it's important that they understand, because I think their job, and correct me if I'm wrong, is, you know, if you are hell-bent and really focused on the fact that you want a natural vaginal birth, they are there to help you. Like to reach that. So even if you kind of have a change of mind, they're kind of barracking for you to stick to the cause because you're so passionate about it. But if they don't understand the medical side, sometimes that can be iffy, because ultimately we just want good result for baby and for mum.
And that's really like, that is actually a really challenging part sometimes. That's very unlikely. Like most of the times it's absolutely, they're amazing. Like how incredible that women can have these supports, and they do have to pay for them. Right. So that is a cost that like doulas, there's, they're not, they don't work for free. They're an additional birth support. But my advice would be make sure you're working with a doula who is realistic to the hospital system too. That's not going to just push back and decline all these things, because that makes it really challenging, one, for us as midwives, but also for the woman, because they get told different things.
Yeah, we've seen some amazing doulas like come through.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, they're incredible, and just... they're so knowledgeable with all like that physiological birth and trying to help women get through and different position changes. Like that's what I mean. They're amazing. Don't get me wrong with that at all. But it's just make sure you do your research to find the best doula for you.
Yeah, 100%.
But pretty much as a midwife, we work as a support person, as a cheerleader.
You got to know.
You are there, you know.
We literally do everything.
Yeah.
Every single thing, every type of monitoring we do, interventions we do, we break women's waters, we put like IV cannulas in, we put those fetal scalp electrodes on the baby's head, we put balloon catheters in, which start the induction process. Like we probably do a lot more than people think we do.
But that's great to know.
Yeah, this is what we want to know.
How great to know
that you absolutely. Do all that.
Midwives are so highly skilled in the public system and in the private system too.
That is so good to know.
I think another kind of misconception is, you know, if you are in the private system and you have any pain or bleeding or discomfort, you know, you can call your obstetrician and you get that kind of seen to straight away. What happens in the public system if you're at home and you're like, I haven't felt the baby kick for a couple of hours, or I've got pain or discomfort?
Yeah. So what you would do is, if it was an immediate concern, obviously, one, you're going to call an ambulance, like, or two, you're going to head straight to the hospital. From there in the hospital, you'd be triaged and then you'd come up to the midwives.
Got it.
Your midwives are always going to still be your first point of call in the public system. But say, Liv, you were at home, right, and you were pregnant and you thought you were in labor, or you've had a little bit of mucousy discharge, or you think your baby's movements have reduced, you'll be given a phone number. And that's 24 hours, 7 days a week managed by a midwife. You'd call us. So this is our assessment center. You tell us your story and we would advise you what to do, to stay at home. It's safe to stay at home, or to come on in.
And I think that number is on the yellow card from memory. Is that right?
Every hospital will sort of have a different way of doing it. We just give like the women the number in their antenatal appointments, Or yep. if you were to just call the hospital and you didn't know where the number had gone, you just asked to get okay. put through.
And is that the same phone call that you can call if you've got a question about anything?
If it's anything, it is probably best to wait for your antenatal appointments mm-hmm. Or see a GP, if depending on the significance of it. If it's an immediate concern, you're always coming into the hospital. Yep. But if you're like 12 weeks and have a question, probably not appropriate to call that number.
I used to start a little notes section. Because you know when you get into your appointment, I know I love a list. But you know when you get in your appointment, they're like, have you got any questions? And you're like,
Yeah, and you forget them.
And you forget everything. You can't think of them. Because you're pregnant, right? So I used to have a little note in my phone, and anytime something would come up, I'd just write that question in. So then when I got in with my midwife, she was like, have you got any questions? I was like, yeah, right. So how long? So yeah, bop, 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 and just ask
and
them
all.
And
that's great.
Yeah.
Because the public system, and I should have said that before, but the appointment times are pretty quick.
Yeah, like 15 minutes. So
if it's your booking appointment, so your first appointment, that's a bit longer. That's usually about 50 minutes. But then the review, so the ones that come after, I would say around 20-minute appointment time.
Yeah, that's a good thing to note, because a lot of people do private because they have, you know, all these appointments lined up and, you know, certain times, whereas it sounds like it's very similar in the public system as well. So there's not huge wait times.
And are the appointments similar in the public system to the private system? I know they are kind of like monthly, then they go fortnightly and then weekly as you get closer to the due date.
So in the like public system, we would have every hospital is completely different. Like they will have different policies that they follow, which will tell them when they should have our appointments. The rule of thumb usually is they're further apart initially. So you'd have like your booking appointment, maybe 14 to 16 weeks. Then you wouldn't have another appointment until after your 20-week scan. Mm-hmm. Because before then, we don't actually have too much to discuss. We need to wait for that 20-week scan. And then following the 20-week scan, you'd usually have like a 22-week appointment, 28-week appointment, and then they'll get closer together in the lead up to your birth. But if there's any concerns in your pregnancy, right, you might have additional appointments. So if you're higher risk, you're going to be booked in more frequently because they're going to be touching base with you.
Yeah.
But if you're lower risk, you're just going to have that standard sort of layout of appointments.
And is higher risk always to do with history, or is it age? What are some of the factors?
There's so many different factors, and women can go from low risk to high risk throughout their pregnancy. So I guess high risk is, so if you're GDM on insulin, so gestational diabetes with insulin, you're going to be managed with the doctors. Mm-hmm. If there's any sort of placental conditions or abnormalities, you're going to be with the doctors. Say that placenta is embedded in your uterus, that's a higher risk thing. You're going to be managed by the doctors. If you've got twins, you're going to be with doctors. Mm. If you have a past history of preterm labor, you're probably going to be with the doctors. Yep. But if you just have gestational diabetes and your diet controlled, you're with the midwives. If everything's pretty much low risk, you're with the midwives.
Yeah.
But some women will have the combination of both, where you'll get both doctors' input and midwifery input, but the medical component will be done by the doctors.
Is there any sort of a wives' tale around genetics? So if your mum sort of popped the babies out, you're kind of expected to pop the baby. Like, I'm Irish, like, you know, like free.
She's into old wives' like, tales.
Boop, 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 boop. Yep. And I had a very similar birth to my mum. Is that an old wives' tale, or is it something to take into consideration? Like, do we make sure that we ask our mums how their experience was? Is that helpful?
I think that like most women will have either similar pregnancies to like their mums. I don't know. Did you guys have similar pregnancies to your mums?
Yeah.
But the birth is a little bit different. I think it's always a good thing to know if they had any like conditions that came up in their pregnancy, or what complications they had in their birth, because sometimes it does help us know, but we don't pay too much attention about what happened to your mum or what happened to your grandma when she had a baby.
Okay.
But we do, like, sometimes we talk about if like your sister had preeclampsia or things like that, it might put you at higher risk. So we just flag them, but if there's nothing's wrong, we're not going to just go, oh, potentially she might get preeclampsia later on. Like, we just keep it normal.
Okay. And now to wrap it up, so what do you think the best thing about having a midwife is?
People often say that midwives are like, one, either their best friend or just like a sounding board. Mm. It keeps them grounded, okay? Because I think we see this all the time. We work with women every single week across all those different aspects of their pregnancy, labor, and birth. And I think it's so special having a midwife because we care so much.
Yeah.
Like, there is not one midwife who I've worked with where I'm like, she actually hates her job.
Yeah, like, I couldn't agree more.
They love doing what they do. They love supporting women. And the fact that we get to play such a small role in your, like, life, but for you guys, you're so grateful for our care.
Mm.
And we see that. And it's just so special to be a part of those moments and be thanked for, you know, doing what we get to do for work. Yeah. Like, it's just so special. And we're always going to be there to support you, advocate for you. We're literally your cheerleader. And I also say we're a bit of a bad smell. We follow you everywhere. Yeah. You go into the bathroom. You go into the bathroom, we'll probably come in too, right? You go into the bed, we'll probably be there.
Yeah.
Like, we're there to get you from point A to point B. And yeah. I always say to the women that I teach in, like, my childbirth education, the minute you walk through the doors, I'm never thinking, oh, there's no way that she's going to do it.
Mm.
Right? The minute I see someone walk through those doors, I'm like, yes, she's got this.
Yeah.
Right? I believe in you 110%. Mm. I will never put any limiting beliefs behind you.
Yeah.
We want the best for you, and we will do every single thing we can to get you that birth that you're aiming for.
So amazing. And just to finish off, pooing is okay on the table with, like, with you. I know you love to talk about this. We shouldn't honestly be ashamed.
No, we want to tell everyone about this because I didn't know it happened. So I want to educate everyone that that's what happens when you're about to give birth. You poo. And you poo.
And if people tell you they don't, they're
bloody liars.
Yeah, I think I said it last time. Yeah. You know, we see it, we grab it, we glove it. Yeah. Right? Someone, I literally said this last night and someone was like, Mod, you need to get that on a t-shirt. And I was like, would that be weird if I was like,
you need to wear it to One Fine Baby.
Yeah, or a cap. Oh, that's awesome. To. Well, what a way to end this.
But absolutely everybody normal. And if poops. If we hear anyone say they need a poo or if they do, that is like the best news for a midwife because we know your baby is close to being born and it's a physiological thing.
Yeah. It's pushing down the canal.
Yeah.
Right?
Everything's coming down. Everything's pushing.
Thank you so much, Monique, for giving us your time today. We've learned so much.
You're a legend.
And it's definitely opened up my eyes to how the public system works and what an incredible service that the midwifery department offer us.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm so happy that you joined us for this because we are public people, Mon and I, and we're so happy to share with you. I feel like I'm one of you. I feel like I'm an honorary midwife.
And honestly, it's a pleasure coming on, but I just think the most important takeaway thing is for women listening going, oh, do I go public? Do I go private? Just know whatever model of care you choose, you're in safe hands. Yes. Like, you're still going to have an amazing experience. But just weigh up those pros and cons. And then ultimately, it doesn't matter what the person down the street did, you just make that best decision for you.
So true.
That is, at the end of the day, as long as you're safe, your baby's safe, that's all that matters.
Now, amazing. If anyone else wants anything more, where can they find you, Mon?
Oh, just head to your socials. You'll probably be on there somewhere. But
You are.
If you head to my Instagram, it's at the Midi Society, and Midi is MIDDEE. But otherwise, I do have my own podcast, which specializes more so in midwifery education and parent stories. Run face-to-face classes in Melbourne, but also have online classes and in the works to create an online platform. But then also, don't know when this episode's coming out, but you might see me at the One Fine Baby Expo.
You sure will.
Yeah, we will.
So we'll see you there, Mon. Thanks so much.
Thanks, babe.
Thanks so much for having me. Bye.
Bye.
That was so amazing. Like, could she be any funnier as well?
Oh, she's just a good person. I don't think I've ever met a midwife I didn't like. I wanted to be a midwife after I gave
there
birth.
There are some, you would have been a good midwife, but there are.
No, I don't think I would have been.
I think you would have been.
I don't know.
But there are some cranky midwives that I've come across. Oh, but I think people like Mon are really leading the way and becoming a bit more modern midwife in how they interact. And it's just about that knowledge, that education, you know?
I think the thing is, it's a knowledge is power. And if I could talk or give advice to someone having their first child, I would tell them not to put your blinkers on and just go in.
Yeah, just read. I kind of want a do-over of both of my births after talking to both Mon and Sophie Walker. Like, I just feel like I did it wrong.
Well, go for it, girl. I need all the content I can get.
That means I have to have
giving
sex.
Giving you full reign.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, that was awesome.
Have a good rest of your week.
Bye.
I love that we've just gone like, okay.
Professional. Okay. Welcome back to the... No.
What the hell am I starting? The One Time Baby Pregnancy Podcast. We're getting our podcast mixed up.
Maybe I should just get in my little booty shorts.
That's the booty. Look at you, girl. Now for the all-important disclaimer.
We are not health practitioners.
Believe it or not.
We are simply sharing our experience in the hope that you'll ask more questions and be more informed.
Because we believe
knowledge is power.
Therefore, this podcast is not designed to be substituted for the advice of a professional.
See you in the next episode.